Richard Coleman from Hungary, about Hungary.
About Hungary and about my folk. I also I will do some songs and one poem in between the questions later on. Just to give you just a bit of cultural background about Hungarian folk songs. First thing, when I came over to the United States, most of the questions what people asked me in the United States about Hungary was what do I think about the United States and how is the political situation in Hungary, or I know pretty good the East Germany because I lived for many years in East Germany, but it's totally different from Hungary. It's much less freedom. I was a couple of weeks in the Soviet Union and I know about Romania, Yugoslavia and a bit of about Albania. Then many people ask about the Green Movement in West Germany. Then why has Hungary the highest suicide rates on the world? What is also an interesting question. What European people, or maybe especially Hungarians, think about Americans when they meet them in Europe? Because much more American are. An average Hungarian would meet an American mostly in Hungary. How Christian live in Hungary and in other Eastern Bloc countries, what is also very different. How did I get a passport to get over to the United States? What was also, what is very unusual, that the Hungarian government is giving a passport for a year, what I get a year. For a month is now pretty okay, but we can talk about it later if you would like to know about it. What I thought to do is maybe I want to give you a bit information about Hungary, and then I just let you go questioning the art questions. First, Hungary is pretty far, I would say almost on the other side of the world where we are now. Hawaii would be exactly on the other side, so 180 degree. Hungary is in the middle of Europe here, and it's very important connection between, railway and also road. So all the roads from the north to the south are going through Hungary. It's like Greece, to the Balkans and Greece and Turkey and the Arabic countries in the east. Then all the roads from the west to the east, like to Russia, this river level and to Romania, are going through Hungary. I just wanted to draw a map, maybe about Hungary. The most important countries around Hungary are Austria, then the whole north is Czechoslovakia. That's the international sign for Czechoslovakia. Just a bit of border since the Second World War with the Soviet Union. Romania, the whole eastern part is Romania, and the whole south is Yugoslavia. The most important river is Vienna, is about here, so that's the biggest city where I think most of the travelers from the west, they stop and they don't go further. And Vienna, we know it's very important it was always the city for the music, and then it's now important too. Budapest is the capital, is in the north, in the middle of the country. The Danube is coming from Vienna at the border and turning just before Budapest and going down to the Black Sea. And then we have another river, it's the Theiss, coming like here. That's the Danube. And we have one big lake, is the Balaton. And some mountains in this area, some small mountains in this one. The highest point is about 3,000 foot. What is about Holden Village? And then this whole field is what we call a kind of prairie. So there's absolute flat land. And this part of the country is flat too. And this is like middle of England, so it's a bit hilly and just in between. That means Hungary is the size of Ohio, also in population and also in square mile. So that's how you can imagine. Because of the fact that this is the big prairie, where most of the grain, corn, and some of this, in this area, there is wine too. Hungary was always not an industrial, but an agriculture country in the past, especially for Austria. I will talk later about it. Budapest has about, the whole country has 10 million people, and Budapest has 2 million, what is one-fifth of the whole population. And the next big city cities are about, five big cities, about 300,000. So there's nothing in between, and that makes Budapest a very important city in Hungary, and I would say almost everything is happening in Budapest, what is important in Hungary. So all the ministries are in Budapest, all the cultural effects and peaks are in Budapest. Just a bit about the history of Hungary. The Hungarian came in 900 after Christ from the Ural, what is in Russia now. It's from somewhere here, and they came by horse, and the language, the Hungarian language, is also related to Finnish. We don't understand each other, but it's related. I think the singing, when I was in Finland for a couple of days, and how Finnish people sing, or that's very similar. I was walking on the street and I thought, oh, that's Hungarian, but then I was listening properly and couldn't understand a word. So Finnish is the only country what is related to Hungarian. And then in 900, they came in, and the Hungarian, they were kind of sitting on horse, and they were never working with the land. And they came in to the Carpathian, the big Carpathian mountains, about 10,000 feet are about around Hungary here. And they entered to this land, and of course, if you sit for a couple of hundred years on a horse, and you always move, you don't want to settle down. So, but then they run out of food, and they could always move to the west until Hungary, because not too many nations were settled down. But they couldn't move to the west more, because other nations, like the Germanian and other nations, were in this area. So At first, they were fighting against the people who were living in this country, what was not very difficult because very few people lived in this area. But they had, but then they ran out of food in the Hungarian land, and then this was a very good country to settle down because of the mild temperature and the mild climate, and then they kind of did some fightings for a couple of weeks to the west, and they were robbing other countries and bringing back the food and all what they got to Hungary. And of course, all the West European nations they got together and they wanted to fight against Hungary. And the king, it was not really a king; it was a leader of Hungary, of the Hungarian nation. He saw that when all the West European nation will fight against Hungary, we will of course lose because we are much less. And he started to make relationship with West European nations, and he had two sons. The one son wanted the old non-belief or believing in sun and earth. So, and he asked, and the other son was Stephen, Saint Stephen. He wanted to. Or the father made him to take the Christian belief, and in 1015 he really forced the people to settle down and not to go anywhere. It was a big fight between the two brothers, and then after the one brother, Saint Stephen, won the fight, he forced the people to settle down, and you had to really work with the land that you can survive. And then the Pope gave the crown to Saint Stephen in 1015, and I think that's one of the high points or the beginning in the Hungarian history. Actually, the crown was after Second World War in the United States, but got back in 1976, I think, to Hungary. And so it was very hard for, you know, what kind of time they were in 1015. If to force people, I mean, if they didn't work on the land, or sometimes if they didn't go to church on Sunday, one weekend they cut one hand off, and the next weekend the next hand, and one leg, and so on. So
my old village.
Oh, the good old days.
So, and in the 14th century, we had a big king, Matthew. He was a very strong king, and he also brought a lot of culture from Italy. He had also a very strong army, so he could fight the Turks back. But just right after he died, the Turks entered the country, and they stayed for 150 years in Hungary. So we have, that's a pretty long time, so we have many Turkish words in the Hungarian language because of the Turks who stayed 150 years. And in the 17th century, we asked Austria to help us to fight off the Turks because we wanted to be independent, and they really helped us. And we were fighting off the Turks back to Yugoslavia and Serbia and Bulgaria, where they stayed until the 19th century. But then the Austrian forgot to home, forgot to get home, and that's why they made the Austrian, Czechoslovakian, and Hungarian what we call Habsburg monarchy. And the monarchy was very big, and Austria was kind of the leader. Czechoslovakia was more the industrial part of the monarchy, and Hungary was the agriculture part. Hungary was so big like all the Carpathians until the First World War. But let me just go in time, and in 1848 it was a big revolution against the Habsburg, against the Austrian. Hungarian people wanted to use their own language in the theater. Hungarian was a kind of home language. You could speak Hungarian at home, but the official language, all in the monarchy, was German. So all the theater was in German. I think in the elementary school you could study in Hungarian, but then when you got to the high school you had to study in German. So all the people who were educated, they spoke, they had to speak German. And then in 1848 it was a big revolution. And one of the big poets was Sándor Petőfi. And I would like to say one of his poems, what he read on March 15th in 1848. I would like to tell you first what is it about. Get on your feet, Hungarians. Your country is calling you. The time is now or never. Shall we be prisoner or free? That's the question. You have to choose now. We have been imprisoned until now. We want to be free from now. That's the poem in Hungarian. Petőfi Sándor, talpra magyar. Talpra magyar. Itt az idő. Itt az idő. Válasszatok! Rabok legyünk, vagy szabadok? Most vagy soha, válasszatok! Rabok voltunk mostanáig, de most már hazamegyünk, mind hazáig. After the revolution, it was about a two-year revolution, and the Hungarians were counting like one Hungarian can kill three Austrians, and so I mean, I just want to say that they wanted to die, but they don't wanted to live with the Austrian together, and. In 1849, the Austrian, when they saw that for 2 years they couldn't put the Hungarians down, they called the Russian Tsar, and the Tsar gave them help. So the troops attacked Hungary from Austria and also from this area, from Russia. And then one of the leaders or the captain, he said, no, there are too many people. But even at that time, many soldiers, after just when it happened, they killed themselves because they said, we don't want to fight. We don't want the Austrians. And we have to, if we have to die, we earlier die. But. And it was a very sad time in 1849. And then, in 4 years after that, the Austrian gave much more freedom for the Hungarians, and I think the situation got much better until the First World War in 1919, when. The Hungary was on the side of the German or of Austrian, of course, and of the German, and we lost of the loser. So the winners like England, France, they decided to split the monarchy because it was too big. So they split in Austria, Czechoslovakia, and Hungary was still too big. So they gave all this part, the half of the country it was only left over. A big part was in Czechoslovakia, and a big part in Romania, what is Transylvania, what was always a kind of independent state, and a small part in Yugoslavia. And I would say there are about half million Hungarian in Yugoslavia. Their situation is the best. The second is Czechoslovakia. There are about 1 million Hungarian living in Czechoslovakia. Their situation is okay, but not too good. And there are 2 million people living in Romania, Hungarians, in Transylvania, and their situation is really bad.
Do the people in these areas still consider themselves Hungarian now?
In Transylvania?
In Transylvania and in Czechoslovakia.
Yeah. I would say there are more Hungarian than the Hungarian in Hungary.
Uh-huh, yeah.
They have to fight every day to be Hungarians. And we are getting more international, and we forget really that we are Hungarian.
When you say that their situation is bad or not so good, you mean today or do you mean
today? Today, yeah. After the Second World War.
After.
Yeah. I'm going to speak about it later. Yeah.
That's all.
Oh, okay. and then just a short line for the Second World War in the 40s began, and Germany was unfortunately, or Hitler was unfortunately not stupid, and he asked Hungary, if Hungary is fighting on the side of the Germans, then Hitler will give Hungary whole Transylvania back. And this was really the point where you could touch the Hungarians. But a couple of weeks later, when the Hungarians said, yes, we'll fight with you, then Hitler went to the Romanians and he said, I will take... So he gave Transylvania back to Hungary. And then he went to the Romanians and he said to the Romanians, if you fight on my side, I take some of them back from the Hungarians and give it back to Romania. So he had both countries on German side. Romania was smart enough to get out from the Germans' occupation 1 year before the war ended, when they saw that they're gonna lose. Hungary wanted, but it was too late in 44 when they wanted to leave, and they called the British to come in and help. But it was kind of end of the war, so it was too late. And then the German came into the country, and it was no way out. So the only way out was, I mean, that the Russian troops came in 1945 in April, and they freed the country. But same like with the Austrian, they forgot to go home too. So that's about the short history of Hungary, what I want to tell you.
Richard?
Yeah.
Was Transylvania, that's in Romania now, but it used to be Hungary?
Yeah. It was always, I mean, since 900 after Christ, it was a part of Hungary. Hungary had about 30 small states, kind of states, we call it, we have another word for it, but was split up for states like this. I don't really remember because they don't exist today. And Transylvania was always, he went always his own way. And it was always like the people in Transylvania, it's very hard to speak to them. You know, that they are like people like this. We don't want to hear anything. We just want to go on our own way. So we, even the Hungarian government before, had always problem with the Transylvanian people, and now they're really, I mean, we are really happy. I don't know, I was in a couple of times, I smuggled Bibles into Romania with other Christians in a guitar, and kind of things like this. Romania has his own, like, has a big mouth in a foreign policy, but inside is probably the worst country in the Eastern Bloc in the economics. And that's also kind of the policy of the government. If we have a bad economics in the country, that we should give the people something in their eye that they don't see the bad economics, like bring Romanian people bring them into the Hungarian area so they can fight with each other, and then they don't see that in the shop is that the shops are empty. That's a kind of policy of the Romanian government. So, do you understand me, Chris?
No, one more time.
Okay, yeah, so the Romanian government brings or kind of makes possible or force Romanians to live in Hungarian areas where a lot of Hungarians are. So if they live together, I mean, they were Hungarians and Romanians, they were always hating each other in the last couple of hundred years. So if they live, that's the same situation today too. And if they hate each other, they will fight each other, and they think that's their maybe the aim of their life, or kind of. So they don't see the empty shops because they don't concentrate on the shop. They concentrate on the fights. And there are really, they really fights, I mean, with knives and between Hungarians and Romanians. And I think even Hungary, because of that, the fact that Hungarian and Romanian, they were hating each other for the last couple of hundred years, I don't know how many, but a couple of hundred, sure. Even in Hungary, even if Hungarian, they don't feel Hungarian. Many times they forgot that they are Hungarian, they feel more international. But if the question Romania comes on, then they feel, oh, I'm Hungarian now, and I fight against Romania. So it's a kind of, that's the moment when Hungarians are even in Hungary, Hungarian. But it's pretty bad. And we Christians in Hungary try to go and ask the pastors, especially the older pastors, why don't you let Romanian kids to come into your church? They are the same Christians. And especially the older pastors also in Hungary can't understand, and they say, we don't want that. So it's really bad. But I think the young Christians in Hungary try to go on a way to make peace between Romanian and Hungarian. The policy of the Hungarian government is not to mention Romania in the newspaper as possible, because even the government doesn't want to fight, but they try to make it also more peacefully. Need more questions? I think I'm open to questions.
Why do they dislike one another so fiercely?
Why they don't?
Like, yeah, why do they disagree or dislike one another so much? What is the original part?
Yeah, I think it's a bit similar like the black and white problem in the United States. I think we can't answer. I can tell you answer, but I think it's not the real answer. Like the Romanian, they are kind of gypsy people, and of course, they have a different background of living. They are maybe not as educated, not as clean. That's the Hungarian. Well, that's what many Hungarians would say why they hate the Romanians.
Um,
there's some things what I maybe want to concern is the education system in Hungary, Christianity, about shopping, about food and meat, and about the economics, how free it is. Maybe short about education. In the Hungarian education system is based on the what we call the German education system. I think there are two in Europe, but they use the British and the German. You enter school when you are six, and then you go. You have to go to school 8 years, so you are 14 when you finish school, but you have to study until you are 16. And I think that's only the law, but most of the people, or maybe 80-90% of the people, they go to the high school after they are 14. So most of the people study until they are 18. I'm just speaking more. Many times we have also gypsy people, and many gypsy people are not going to school or really bad educated, and even they have to go to school until they are 16, like they do the 6th and the 7th grade twice, and then they can leave school. So, like, when you are 14, then you can choose between two kind of high school. The one is giving you more practical thing, and like, if you want to be a carpenter, then you go to the A system, what gives you more practical and more work with your hands, and kind of you go to school 3-4 days a week, and then one day you go to the factory and you learn practical. The B system is what we call gymnasium, is when you don't know what you want to be, but you want then an education in general. When you are in fifth grade in the regular school, you have to start the first foreign language, and you have to study Russian. So everybody from the fifth grade on until you are in school, even in college, you have to study Russian. In the high school, when you enter the high school, when you're 14, you have to take a second language, or you have to take a second language. You can choose between German, French, Spanish, and English. So these are the most common languages. I would say 50% of the people choose English, 30% German now, and 20% French, and very few people Spanish or other languages. I think, yeah?
When people take English, are they planning to travel out of Hungary?
No. No, they take English because English is becoming, because Hungary becoming more international in many ways, like we use the international patents and then things like this. So and in many ways we open up, especially in the last 10-20 years, Hungary opened up more. So, and if you got international, that then you realize that the English is more important than the German. If you want to travel, you take German, because I think in the middle of Europe, German is the most important language.
All the classes are taught in Hungarian?
Yeah. What do you mean? Oh, sure.
Well, I guess because of the Soviet control, I thought that it was possible that maybe they would...
Oh, no. I mean, there are some very few people, like some Serbian and some Austrian people live in Hungary, or Slovakian, and even some Romanian. They can have their own school, but there are, I mean, maybe under 0.5% in the country.
And we give them especially, that's also that brings me back to the policy, Hungary really forced, sometimes the Hungarian government forced Romanian to study Romanian and go to Romania, I mean, doesn't force, but ask them many times and give them many, many possibilities to use their own language, because the Hungarian government hope that in exchange, the Hungarian in Romania can use their own language too. So it's a kind of, there are 1,000 people in the country and we have 5 schools or 10 schools, so more schools than what we use, and they have all their own radio program and TV program, and it's, I mean, for 1,000 people, it's okay, but they could use the money what they give them in radio program and TV program, they could give them and make their own, they could use the money, I think, much better in ways to use their own language than to use the whole public, 10 million people, because of the few people who live in Hungary. But that's the policy of the government. And then when you, so back to high school, when you are in high school and you can choose between special classes. Also the difference between the United, okay, at first the special classes. Like, I studied French as a special class. I entered a special class and in the high school, and when I choose French as a second language, I have 3 hours a week. But because of the fact that I was in a special French class, I had 7 hours French a week. So, and also I can, when you enter the high school, we have to decide which special class you use. So when I entered the high school and I choose French, that means I have to study 4 years in the class, 7 hours a week French, what is special. And then kind of possibilities was many people choose at special classes, math, physics, biology, very few people history, there are very few classes in history, maybe in geography, but not very, very popular. Mostly I would say it's biology, math and physics, and languages. Yeah.
Is there any art or music?
Yeah, that's in general. Like, you can't choose, like you choose in the United States, what kind of classes you want to take. You have special classes, that means you have more in French or in math or in physics when you have if you are in a special class in physics, but you have to study the same amount of biology, geography, art, like everybody else. And the teacher, they don't have as much freedom than here, the high school teacher, than here. So they have a kind of, you have to go through the book and you have to study what is in the book. And there is one book for Hungary, for the second high school level in Hungary. So if you are a teacher, you have to study this, you have to teach this book. And you can teach more, but that's the minimum what you have to teach.
But can you choose art as a special class?
I think so, yeah, but very few. So it's probably also under 1%. Very few people do that. Then when you graduate, you are 18 when you graduate from high school, and then there's a big question, especially a big question if you came on this line. Then there's a university or college. It's also, the one is the university what we call, and let's say the other is college. So you can go from both high school systems to the university or to the college. But I think most of the people go from this kind of, the people who, like maybe I would say 50% of the high school student want to study longer from this system, and maybe 90% from this system, they go further on. And from these 50%, I think 3/4 they go to the college system, what is 3 years. Only 1/3 or 1/4 is going to the university, what is 5 years.
And from the B system, it's the opposite. So most of the people from the B system go to the university for 5 years, and only few people go for the 3 year. The difference is, like, for teacher, if you want to become a teacher, if you go to the college for 3 years, then you can teach only in the what we call elementary school, like from the first until the eighth grade, so from 6 to 14 years old kids, and you can't teach in high school if you study here. So it's 3 years, and it's also more practical than university. University is more scientific, and more that you do your master or doctor degree. That's why I think when you finish university, I came on this line, so I went to the B system, and I didn't know what shall I do now. I don't know. I don't want to work. What shall I do now? Okay, I have no idea. I don't want to go I'm good in math and physics, so that pushed me to the technical university. And mechanical engineering was not the easiest, but not the most difficult to get in. So I was more interested to mechanical or electrical engineering, and the electrical engineering was very hard to get in. So I took mechanical engineering for 5 years, and you study 4.5, and then in the last half year you have you make your what we call diploma. You have a professor, and you are in contact with him, and he's giving you instructions, and then what we call you are that's a German system, a diplom engineer. What is, I think, in the American system is less than a master degree, but more than a college. Yeah, any questions for education?
Well, how did you end up being an interpreter then?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Then I in the last year in the university, I was a black sheep, so kind of I didn't go too often to university. I realized life is not only sitting home and studying books, what I did especially in 2 years. Later I can tell you, remember me, I was before the university, I was 1 year in the army, so you can speak later about it if you are interested. but in the army, it was a very quiet time for me, and I was a very disciplined person. I was very quiet, I didn't talk to the people, that was very good, because in the first 2 years at the university, especially in the first half year, or first year, I think about 30% of the students, they fall, so they can't enter to the second, because it's so hard, especially math and physics. And so the first 2 years at university was really only sleeping, eating, and studying for me. And then you go to university, and there are music from here, and then a lot of things going on at the university, and you would like to go, but you can't, because you have to study. It's hard, especially the first years, because you come from the high school and you have much more possibilities. The world is really opening for you. You would like to go to many entertainments, and there are many sessions, and you would like to know really more and more, and you just can't go because you have to study math and physics, and it's really hard. That's why I think many people fail. Also in university, our university system is always criticized, it's bad or good. So it's not, especially in technical university, when you start to study like mechanical engineering,
you can't choose classes. I mean, there's everything on the list what you have to study to know all the things about to be a mechanical engineer. When you study a language or humanities, like literature, biology even, then you have much more freedom. You get always jealousy about the students who are studying languages or literature, because we ask them, oh, what are you studying? And then they said, oh, I don't know yet, but I have to choose one of the things what I would like to. And in the technical university in Hungary, I think in also in Germany, you can't choose. There's a kind of, that's the amount what you have to study to be an engineer. And there are very few things what you can really choose, and only the fourth years you start to choose some things. So it's really, we call it, that's not a university, that's a elementary school system. What is in many ways true, but it gives you also discipline. So in some ways it's good. And then the fourth year, I started to realize life is not only university and sitting in the front of the book, and I started to do interpreting just for a couple of days, and kind of a free enterprise when I was not very busy at university, and then. Of course, I asked older people or older engineers, what should I do? And they said, if you want to be a good engineer, you should go to a factory and work with your hands that you have practiced. And then, after a half year, you can go back to engineering and you only know what you can do and what you can tell the workers and what you can't. So I went to the biggest factory in Hungary, about 20,000 worker, and I was working in the shop down in the factory. But before that happened, a director of an export and import company in Hungary, I don't know how he got to know me, but he called me for a speech or a report, and he was asking me about my engineering degrees, and he was talking to me in German and a bit in French, and he said, oh, we'd like to have you as a salesman. The export import is owned by the government. You can't do it's only owned by the government. So not like the United States, you can have private companies. I think for the whole export and import in Hungary there are 6 or 7 export-import companies. So, and he asked me the question, and I said, oh, but somebody said I should work in the factory. And he said, okay, but then after a half year, come back and join us. And then that was the kind of program. And then in the factory, they wanted me to be a service engineer to repair machines, mostly in Europe, in different countries. But they wanted to send me to Poland for 3 or 4 years, what I didn't want to do. and then somebody came from this company, from this interpreting company, and they asked that there's a new possibility now. The government gave us the possibility to make small private companies up to 30 people. And this law just came out in 1982. And they made a small company, and I don't know why they choose me, because from the government agency, to the kind of factories, all the factories in Hungary or companies, if they need an interpreter, they call a travel agency, and the travel agency had all the names, the free enterprise people, freelance people. And from these, I think 200 people, I think probably the best interpreters made a company, so kind of they left the travel agency, what was a big cut for the travel agency. But I mean, we say for a government company, it's nothing, it's a cut, but they don't care as much about money. So this, and they
they choose me also to enter to this private. I mean, they asked me if I want to, and then it was a big decision. Shall I leave really my mechanical engineering life or not? And then I left, and I entered this company, and just in comparison, I was in the export-import company. They wanted to pay me 2,800, and then in the factory they paid me 4,300, and in the interpreting company they paid me 2,500. So it was like five times more what they paid as an engineer. And I said, but I always like to be independent from the money. So this was kind of not the main decision. I asked myself, why shall I not go to a private company and working as an interpreter, especially in technical terms, for German, Austrian companies who are coming and selling machines in Hungary, because that's more my lifestyle. And you have more relationship with different people. You can use the languages, and you can serve people. You can serve more people than in the factory. And I like the idea to serve other people. So I decided to enter the company, and then later, after 2 years, the big company split, and I made with three other people our own company, but then this one didn't work. So I have a company by my own, but it's just not. I mean, we don't have no income and no outcomes. But this was the reason why I could come to the United States.
Because you had your own company.
Because
that's how you could get a visa.
That's right. Because this was a kind of excuse in the. The whole thing is the ministry in Hungary for foreign policy gives you a passport if your company agree. But it was not a problem because 99% or almost everybody in the country was employed by a government company, and they had a law giving to the companies that they can't give you more than 1 or 2 months. 1 month is okay, but in special cases, 2 months. So it's about your holiday is about 3 weeks, and they can give you 1 week unpaid holiday. So a government company would never give me more than 1 or 2 months. But because this paper is very important in the eye of the government, and the new rule came in that you can have small private companies, what didn't exist before. That's why my company, what's me, I gave myself the permission to go to the United States for 1 year. So that's why I could come. And that's also the reason why I could go in the last, I was in the last 3 years for every year for 3 months in England, what is also very unusual. And the second time when I wanted to go to England, they called me and somebody from the police said, we won't give you 3 months. You can have 1 month and that's all. And there's also no reason to give you 3 months because you have no money, no money in your bank account. What is also a question, because our money cannot be taken out of the country. So you have to you can have a special account for currency, for West European currency, and if you have the money, then the government is sometimes try to act as a good father. So if you have the money, then you can go, but not for, even if you have too much money, you can't go for too long because then other people are getting jealous. So that's and also in Hungary, it's the law that there's no unemployment, but everybody has to work. So you can't be unemployed more than for a month when you change jobs or something like this. So why would you like to travel for more than a month? Because you have to work, like everybody has to work. So they didn't like my idea. And then they said, okay. And then also the the fellow who invited you, you is not your relative, he said that. And then all these things what he said, I collected for this year. So I made my invitation for 1985 was from my relative, because I have one relative in Vienna. And then I traveled with him to the United States, what is not true, but I mean, he can invite me to travel with him. I was working for a Swiss company who is not able to pay me in Swiss francs, because he should give it to the government, and then the government can pay me in Hungarian money. That's a kind of income for the government, dollar income, or currency income. So, but I took the money in cash from the Swiss company, what was not really legal, and then, oh, I didn't really take it. I asked them to give it to my uncle in Vienna. So, and my uncle sent it to me like a gift for my traveling. But it's, that's the way how I played my game.
What is your understanding for why the country doesn't want people to leave for too long?
My understanding why the country doesn't want...
Kind of like hope.
I think... because the rule or the policy in Hungary is who is not working can't survive. So everybody has to work. And then if you have to work, how can you live more than for a month? That's the way how the government thinks.
Do you think that's the real reason?
I think, yeah, the people in the government, they really believe that. Yeah.
You don't think it could be something like seeing the Western world and being enticed away, or being drawn away from Hungary, or
during the time I'm here?
Yeah.
Like wanting a different standard of living or something.
Not necessarily you, but anybody that would travel longer would see different standard of living in other parts of the
no,
world.
No, I'm pretty sure not. Good question. Because since 1976, the policy of the government is everybody who wants to go can go. Not the way that you apply to the government, then you can't apply to the government, hey government, I would like to leave this country forever. Then they will say no, you can't. And they won't give you a passport for 5 or 10 years. But it's a kind of like this. So if you apply for a passport and you go to Vienna, you can have it any time. Even if your brother or your dad or your son just left the country forever yesterday, you will get your passport. What is a big change in comparison for the 50s and 60s? Like when somebody from the family in the 50s, 60s left forever the country, or escaped, or stayed in the West, then the police came to the family and made a lot of questions, and sometimes the wife or the relative had to leave his job, and was very hard to get him another job. And then it was a kind of time in between late 60s, early 70s when if your relative left forever, then you didn't get a passport. The police didn't come, but you didn't get a passport for 5 years, 10 years. You just applied. The government can give you a passport or can not give you a passport. And even saying without any notice why they don't give you a passport. It's based on what we call international law. If the United States or any state, but just for example, the United States doesn't let me in, the international law says the United States doesn't have to explain why he doesn't let me in. He can let anybody in who he wants to let in, and that's for every country.
What would happen now if you decided you wanted to stay in this country, in the United States?
Yeah.
How could you even try that?
Yeah, now that's all, the situation is getting always better and better. And like in the 60s, 50s, if you came back, like I know some people who came to the United States, they wanted to stay here forever, but they were so homesick, they want to go back. And then they came back to Hungary, and suddenly after they left forever, or they give you generally 10 days or 15 days or 30 days, and when the 30 days run out, then and you didn't come back, then they made a judgment on you. So they, even if you were not in the country, you were on the list to be imprisoned for 5 years. So when you came back at the border, they took you and took you to prison because you left the country without that the government allowed it. Now the situation, what was it? And it was just in the 70s when you left, like I have a friend, he left Hungary in 76, I think, and he lived in the United States for 2 years. But he also came back to Hungary in 78, I think because he was homesick. And in 78, the thing was, he couldn't find a job. So, I mean, he applied for a job in many places, but he said because of the fact that he was away without the permit of the government, and they were only special factories where he were allowed to work, like very heavy work in metal industry and things like this. I know him because he was working in freelance in interpreting. So that was a kind of, if you work for freelance, you are not employed. You work for the day you translate. And that's why that was a good place for him. Now the situation is even, since 1981, there is also a new law that the Hungarian government said that Hungary is a free country for in and out. It means, that you can leave my passport in my hand for 30 days. Then I went back and I said, hey, I have an invitation from Vienna. I want a year. Change it for a year. So that's also very important that when you apply for a year, just in the first time, then they may say, we don't give you a passport. But because of the law says that if you can travel to the West, then there is no time limit, kind of. But then they can say, you are not allowed to travel. But if you have my passport for 30 days, then I am allowed to travel. So it's very, not what I call the small gates. I go on the small gate. And just one thing, now the policy is, if I would live, stay here longer than my passport is, then I could come back, I could work whatever what I want, and they would not give me a passport to the West for 5 years. And this guy who stayed in the United States for 2 years and came back and couldn't find a job in the 70s, the late 70s, he got his passport in 83 because the 5 years were over, and he traveled to the United States for 2 months again. So this is a good sign. Yeah.
Getting back to a little bit what we talked about, is there, or what is the difference in the standard of living between Hungary and the United States? Material goods or?
Yeah, good question. Yeah, I think first the material goods and also we're talking about shopping, that if you live in Hungary, you have more public transportation. And you sit less time in a car, like in the United States. But you can afford a car. Every family has his own car. But the situation is not as good that you can use your car every day. So the gas is too expensive and the parts of the car. So you have to think, like my parents just wrote, they took a car for the winter into the kind of under the roof. I don't know. That's I don't understand why they did it, but it's also a bit that my mom is concerned to drive in slippery roads. but I think that definitely what the average family can drive his car once a week or once to the opera or if you drive more you can, but then you have to short things on other. Shopping is something what every family has a TV, has a fridge. Most of the people live in the city in the condominiums with two children, maybe two or three rooms. That's but small rooms and the bathroom. And people in the village or outside the cities, they live in houses in their own houses, and they have much more space and room. But to keep that on, they also have to work more. But because there is not as much entertainment in the village than in the city, you have more time to mend your things and work in the vineyard or in. Many people in the village, they have chicken and pigs home, and they sell it to the government to a very good price, and the government is using it as an export to the industrial countries like Austria, West Germany, Switzerland. I would say even many times the people in the village are much more rich than people in the cities. It's interesting, but that the young people are leaving the village, even if they are richer there.
They're leaving?
Yeah, they're leaving.
Why?
Because they would like to have, it's always happening some things. They would like to go to theater, to cinema, and movies, and yeah.
What do you miss?
From home? I miss the attention of the people that I think people in this country don't think as much what the other fellow next to me would like to have or would like to. So, yeah, I think that people in my country, that's also positive and negative. They go further into your own life, into your private life. What is in many ways good if you have trouble, but if you want to be by your own, then it's getting bad.
Solitude day be pretty weird.
Yeah, I think so.
did that idea strike you funny when we did it?
No, because I was in Tese and I was in Tese for longer, for a day or two in solitude.
Would it strike the average? What's a real common first name in Hungary?
Peter.
Would it strike the average Peter funny to have a solitude day?
Yeah.
I don't know how long this goes on, but you haven't talked any about the church, and I was interested in hearing a little bit about the church and how it sees itself as working within socialism and.
Just some facts on the beginning. I was really surprised that we celebrated Christmas only for one day, because Christmas is always 2 days, mm-hmm. national holidays in Hungary. And the other thing is what I heard, Easter is not a national holiday. Here in Hungary, it's Monday a national holiday, mm-hmm. so nobody's working on Monday. And church is a kind of thing what the government wanted to push out in the 50s and 60s. They wanted to wholly disturb the church They imprisoned many priests, and it's interesting to speak to. I was speaking to some Catholic priests. They're coming to you and saying, "Oh, prison was my best time because I meet so many Christians in belief in the prison." So it's just amazing. But the policy and the government in this way changed in late 60s, and they're becoming each year more and more friendly. And it's for my parents who lived in the 50s and who had to raise their hands when they were speaking about Rákosi, who was the president in the 50s. It was a kind of, he was the god in Hungary and everybody had to love him. Doesn't matter what you think about him, but you have to raise your hand and say, "Hello, he's the best guy." And if you didn't say this, then maybe not your neighbor was watching you, and he was telling the police that maybe bad things about you without any reason, and the next day the police came and took you to prison or even killed you without judging. And that's why the revolution was in 1956 in Hungary, because the situation was so bad, the personal cult, and the people say, "Oh, what a heck, why shall we go to the street?" And the situation is so bad that we can't lose anything, so we fight. Now the situation is so good that they even made the Lutheran World Meeting in 83, I think, in Budapest. And but this was something organized. The government is still afraid, I think, about big meetings. When more than 100 people meet in a place and it's not a communist meeting, then what's going on here? So we don't know about that. Now it's I meet with my church group every month in a home, and sometimes we are really 60-70 people. So I mean, everybody can see in the house that people are coming in and going out. And I think as far, because of the policy now the government is that everybody should criticize the government in a positive way. That's why they give also more freedom for the Christians. And they also, the head of the church and the head of the government is becoming friendly with each other. What is good in a way that nobody's watching you if you go to church, but bad in a way that if the government gives money or something for the church, then the church head of the church feels, we should do something for the government positive too. What is makes maybe the Christianity less. And it's also the church is supported money-wise by the government, so all the Catholic priests are paid by the government. What is not a good thing, but the government realized that the tourists come to the country. It's a good thing. It's involved with a lot of money, but the money is coming slowly back. So that's why the government realized make the church nicer, to paint them, and some of them were really in a bad situation. And the biggest thing is what we have is a pilgrimage at Easter every year, when many churches in Budapest and surrounding areas, they meet outside from Budapest, and we have about 120 miles going on, walking pilgrimage, what is split up in 3 days. Maybe not 100, it's about 90 miles together. So we walk about 20 miles, 25 miles, I think, each day, something like this. And this is for about 1,500 people. So that's how people, and I think the government knows that, and it's organized by the Catholic, mostly young Catholic priests. And it's a very nice thing. You wake up when the sun comes up, like 4 o'clock in the morning, and everybody takes the tents. So you live in tents, and then you
walk on during the day, and we have different hours. 1 hour singing, like some TC songs or some Christian songs, then 1 hour meditation, and then 1 hour break for eating, and then 1 hour discussing this part of the Bible. And all during the time you walk, you speak. You are in a small group with about 6-7 people, and then you have a small flag, this kind of cross, and it's very nice, so organized. And in the end of the day, you meet in a camp, and you have a campfire and sing together.
Just by comparison, my assumption is that that kind of thing would not be as possible in Romania.
No, never.
But it would be in Yugoslavia.
Yeah, in Yugoslavia, I think.
In Czechoslovakia, it seems a little bit tighter than...
I don't know, Czechoslovakia is one of the places I don't know too much. Yeah. Definitely it won't be possible in East Germany.
Do you feel the government's influence in the church now?
I have some friends, or one of the friends, he's a biologist, and he's working in a library, because in a state library, that he can get more information about the government, about secret things. And he tells always things about why our leading of the church is not revolutionary enough, and why he is too lazy. But I think the church, the most important church is the Catholic Church in Hungary, because about 80% of the believer are Catholic, and the rest is Lutheran and Evangelical. So. It was in Time magazine, I think, also about the Catholic Church writing that the Catholic Church has some problems today, and not only in Hungary, but I think all over in Europe, and maybe also in the United States. So it's the leader of the church is chosen by the Pope. But I think the government has to agree. So kind of has to be somebody who is good in the eye of the government, and good in the eye of the Pope. So that's a kind of, we are going in between in a way. And I'm sure in some questions it's good, because it gives you more freedom to go to church. But if you want to do some new things, especially in this case, if the government would say no. The people in the government are really believing that Christianity is dying out, and we don't have to worry about it. And there are no statistics how many people go to church or how many people are Christians, I think that's good, because since I think 1950 there is a law that, or 60s, that the government can't ask or on any information leaflet or paper, or even when they employ you, what kind of, if you are Christian or not. So they never ask you if you are Christian or not, and I think that's good, because the government doesn't know it. I think there is a new movement. If you go to church generally, you will find a lot of old people, but there's a kind of new movement, especially from the big cities in Hungary, in between Christians. And I think because the idea of communism the idea was maybe not bad, but it's not working in a way how people who believe in communism wanted it. Many kids whose father is in the Communist Party or is a leader in the Communist Party, it sees that that's not the way I would like to live, and then they go to church, and they ask more questions, and become more Christian.
Is the government aware of this in the homes? Like, you know, you said you meet the 60 or 70 people in the homes.
Yeah.
Do they know that that's what that is? Because they think it's dying out because only old people go to church.
Yeah, I think the government knows about it, but he's not doing anything until the meeting is not getting against the government. So if it's a Christian meeting, they say okay. One of my biggest surprise was that Billy Graham was, I think, in the fall in Hungary, and he met with 10,000 people in a stadium. And this was, I think, something not like the Lutheran World Organization. So it was not an organized meeting, it was really a free prayer. And I was really, I heard my mom told me before, and I was just surprised that we are really so far that the government even allowed free prayers for 10,000 people. I mean, that's even for me unbelievable. Yeah.
Emory asked a few minutes ago what you miss about Hungary. What will you miss about the United States when you go back to Hungary?
I would miss that people who are, and especially in Minnesota in the summer, I realized if you are a boss or a leader, then you don't sit in your chair and say, oh, people move, don't do that, do that. I am the boss, I'm not doing anything. That's the way how it is in Hungary. If you are a leader here or a boss, you work too, with the others, together. That's definitely I would miss very much.
You gonna miss Minnesota, you said?
Minnesota is unfortunately my home, the United States, because.
Don't you see Memo sit in his chair?
Because Minnesota, I was the whole summer in Minnesota, then I was traveling in the United States in the fall, but I stayed only a couple of days in each town. So I stayed the longest in Minnesota, except Washington, but Holden Village is not really in Washington. More outside the world.
That is
very
true.
Richard, yeah. I mentioned the high suicide rate.
Yeah.
Is that mostly young people? Why do you think that is? You don't have any idea?
No, I think we all don't have any idea, and not only me, but also psychologists search for it, why. And it's all not only Hungary, but also the whole monarchy. So, and it's all not only now and this year, but since the last, I think, 100 years, we are Hungary, Austria, and Czechoslovakia is always within the first 5 or 10 in the world, high suicide rate. And I don't know, one of them, what I was telling people in Christmas, I know Christmas is a time when many people commit suicide because the families in Hungary are so closed in at Christmas time. And if you are a friend of another family, then Christmas is the only time when you are not welcome to go to another family, because Christmas is only for our family, and we don't want anybody in our family. That's the way, unfortunately. And that's, I think, 20% of the suicide rate is at Christmas, what is pretty high.
How is, Budapest? Is that a pretty gay city? Is there a lot of nightlife? You mentioned operas and concerts.
Yeah.
Are there nightclubs? And do people have money to go out to dinner?
Yeah, I think in the 1840s we had a graf or a lord. He gave all his money for building small cafes where people can sit and drink and talk about the situation. He made it because he wanted to get away from the Austrians, that people realize. But I think that's still the lifestyle in Hungary now, that I think two times a week you go out
and to a restaurant, and since the prices are getting a bit higher, you don't eat, but you drink wine or beer. Sometimes you eat, yeah. So, yeah.
Richard, we've all heard about the hunger and freedom fighters.
Yeah.
Where are they now? Are they just quiet middle-class citizens going to work, or are they in jail, or?
No, that's interesting. One of the statistics that there is no political prisoners in Hungary right now, since 1981, I think. So I know some, I heard some of the freedom fighters, they are kind of controlled by the police. Controlled mean, I mean, they can move, but somebody is following them. So they're not in jail, they can go anywhere in Hungary, but that's the way out.
Can they travel abroad?
No, I don't think so too much. Maybe some for special conferences, but it's depending. There are really very few people, a couple of hundred, I think, in the whole country, or even less.
Have any of them come to terms with the government, or come to accept the way things are?
No, and you don't know about it, even if it would be like this. One of the biggest secret meeting was when I was there. One young engineer came to a private home meeting, and we had about 50, 60 people in the room, and mostly Christians and from the church. And he was telling us that the government wants to build a, an energy, like a hydro, on the river Danube, somewhere here.
A dam.
A dam, yeah, what makes electricity. Mm-hmm. And he said that this would affect the whole nature. He was a kind of green. He explained us why it's really bad, and that people in these areas between Budapest and here, they would not have clear water, because the water level would be just almost nothing. And then that you have water in Budapest just for sightseeing, or that's where they control the water here. So I didn't understand everything, but he wanted to sign everybody a letter what he's sending to the government, not to build this dam. I didn't sign it because I wanted to hear the other side. I don't judge until I don't hear both sides. So, but unfortunately I didn't have the possibility to hear the other side, even if I know somebody who is almost the head. My mom, she was working with somebody, and her husband, and my mom and she were very good friends, so our families, we met like every year once. And this man, he's also a Christian, which is interesting, and he's the head for this project. And my mom just wrote today that he's getting more and more busy because they are starting it. This young man, he told us that the government is split also in part, like some of them, they say, oh, we need energy, and some of them are more concerned. So they gave, I think, and it's going on since, I think, 20 years. Shall we build it or shall we not build it? So it's really not an easy question. Yeah.
You said that there is no unemployment because everybody works. Who takes responsibility for providing the jobs? Is it the government then, if you can't get work otherwise?
Yeah,
do they hire you?
No, there is, I think we are not in the level of automatization as that every factory can have. We are getting into unemployment, I think, in the next 3-5 years. Mm. And it's going to be a problem, but not yet. We are talking also, or we are not talking in Hungary, about another kind of unemployment, when somebody is applying for a job, like a secretary job, and I'm a boss, and I have already 3 secretaries, so I don't need more, because one would be enough. So But I employ her because, oh, why not? I can't send her away.
So, are wages that low that you can afford to do that?
I mean, my company is not in my private, but I'm just, for example, if I would be employed by in a government company, then the government is paying.
Oh, so it is the government that
that's right.
Soaks
and,
up that.
There are many people, I don't know, it's getting better, but especially in the 50s and 60s, it was really bad. Sometimes even half of the factory had no work. And that's a kind of also unemployment, when you got your wages, you got your money, but you have no work to do.
So is the country taxed accordingly to pay for all the government employees? Or where does the money come from to pay?
Mm-hmm.
It taxes?
Yeah, taxes, but I think we don't speak as much about the money as you do here in the United States. So it's not as open, the question.
Oh.
It's more reserved or close for only few people in the government who know where they put the money. It's not as known like here.
I see.
Someone was describing to me your medicine system is socialized, right?
Yeah.
But someone said that you said that that actually a tip of sorts is expected?
Yeah, that's right. The medicinal system is free. Especially, I just tell you one example is the dental care, what is the most extreme, but it's not all over like this. If you go to the dentist in a hospital or owned by the government, then the dentist, maybe half of the dentists, if you have some big work on your teeth, then he would just say, oh, I have to pull your teeth out. So he would not do a lot of work because, oh, I'm not doing it here. He would think, oh, you can come to my private office and I'm doing it for you, but then you have to pay. So it's kind of, they force you in a way that you are going to the private dentist, and every dentist who is working in the morning for the government has a private office by his own, where he has his own prices, and these prices are very high. But then he is working very properly on your dentist, and that's pretty good. I mean, that the work is pretty good. What he's doing in the afternoon, the situation is pretty bad.
And even though the medicine is socialized in the country, private practice is accepted?
Yeah, like other... What do you mean? I didn't... I got you.
They allow that to happen?
You do have socialized and private.
Yeah. Yeah, almost. Maybe not in surgery, because... not only things what you can be healed...
Are elective instead.
Elective, like that you go to the doctor and he can look at you or with few instruments and then he can describe you some medicine. That's in almost in all ways they can do it private, but not in big things. Like it never happened that maybe that's why it's the tipping. If you have a kid, you can just wait for, you can phone the ambulance that, oh, my wife is getting her kid now, and then the ambulance is coming and taking you to the hospital. And then you don't know who's the doctor who will take care of the kid. And then sometimes it's a good doctor, sometimes it's a bad doctor, or sometimes it's even a very young fellow who just came to our university. I mean, it's really...